And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Mr. Dirk Holger, who is here in Lafayette as a part of a new exhibit at the Hilliard University Art Museum. The exhibit, which will open this weekend to the public, is called The New Art of the Loom, Contemporary International Tapestries. And Mr. Holger is with the Aubusson Tapestry School and is curating this exhibit, actually, or has curated this exhibit. Mm-hmm. So tell us, before we talk about this particular exhibit that you've curated, what is the Aubusson Tapestry School?
Well, there was one famous, the only one in the world, tapestry school. It's unfortunately now closed for the last three, 4 years, called École Nationale d'Art Décoratif d'Aubusson. That's why I've learned my French. Mm-hmm. I never had it at school. I learned it par cœur at that school. And the only purpose for that school was to train those so-called artists to concentrate on a work that has very time-consuming. Actually, tapestry weaving is the most time-consuming craft. And when I come to museums and offer a show of modern tapestries, I always have to hear this horrible line, "We only show art and no craft." And then I give them my answer: in tapestry, the craft is the art, and that shuts them up.
Well, tell us about that art of tapestry, because many of us think of tapestries as very old, the medieval Renaissance tapestries, the Lady and the Unicorn, and those very famous tapestries. Mm-hmm. But this is an art that has continued. Tell us about...
Well, for centuries, yes. And it will last for centuries. So right now we are in it's not very in these days. Pop art and other so-called art is popular.
C'est pas à la mode.
Well, pas à la mode du tout. But tapestry is always the elegant, the most noble of all the art, in especially the late Gothic Renaissance. And then came the decadence, and I must admit, I shouldn't say that in public, but we are in public now. With Raphael came the decadence, because this is now painting in wool and silk instead of designing for tapestries. He never visited the workshops like I did. I've had to study the Aubusson weaving technique, which is a bustless or low warp technique, before I designed a tapestry. Look at the Calder here, the Calder tapestries. He came and visited. He knew how to do it, because you don't paint and give the painter an image and say, weave it. No, you have to visit the weaver at the loom and say, is he able to do this? You have to think like a weaver to execute a design the right way. And you brought up the Lady with the Unicorn. The correct title is La Dame, la Dame avec le Lion et la Licorne, the Lady with the Lion and the Unicorn, because I know who she is.
You know who she is.
This is my next book. It's called The Secret of the Lady with the Lion and the Unicorn Revealed. Because there's always in each tapestry, next to the unicorn, the lion. Why? They are the coat of arms of which country after 1514? England. The British lion and the unicorn came in from Scotland. I got to tell it in one sentence. It's the hidden, forbidden love triangle.
Do we have to wait for your book to find out?
Yeah, you have to, because otherwise, you know, people don't believe it anyway. But I believe it hard. And the man who found it, Monsieur André Arnaud of Aubusson, gave me the exclusive right. He is typical French. Everywhere in the world, except for France, where he wants to publish it.
You know? Well, I think people can hear in your voice your passion for tapestry, whether it's the history of it or the making of it. How did you get interested in tapestry?
Well, this is, of course, one of those moments. You never heard the name of Jean Lursa. I happened to be his last student. His widow just died at age 93, 4 years ago. And he has a tapestry in Cologne City Hall in Germany. And I was a set designer for Opera House. I love opera. And the director said, I was a set designer, "You're not 3D, you're 2D-dimensional. There's this tapestry by a certain Lursa in Cologne. Go and see it." And I went over and I went down on my knees. I've never seen something like this, about 80 square yards, but square meters, but almost 100 square yards on a black background. I never heard the name before, either Lursa. What did I do? I sat down and wrote in German first, and then someone translated for me because I didn't have French yet. This is the best thing I've seen in my life. And I went to the theater director, said, from today on, I make nothing else but tapestries. He said, I thought so.
And what a smart man.
He knew that he sent me to the right man. And, of course, I sent this famous letter in French that I couldn't read yet. And 5 years later, he answered, come tomorrow or forget it. Lou invited me, and that was in Saint-Séverin in the southern France. And it took me almost 3 days to get there. So I tell him, you know, I don't drive, even today, I don't drive a car. I don't need a car. I go anywhere in the world.
So you waited 5 years to hear from this Lursa, tapestry artist.
Jean Lursa.
And you went immediately.
Immediately. And within 3 days with Lursa, I said it tonight at my lecture and tomorrow too. And 3 days, he was such a pedagogue. I learned more than in 12 semesters of art studies.
Well, for those of us who don't know Monsieur Lursa, describe him as an artist. What kind of tapestries did he make?
Well, in that case, I have to invite you to go to Angers. I spell it in English, Angers, A-N-G-E-R-S, west of Paris. You absolutely have to go and see the Apocalypse d'Angers of the 14th century, the largest set of tapestries in the world ever woven. Over 750 square yards are left. They were larger. And he had his epiphany.
Epiphany?
In front of those tapestries in 1939. And he said, in front of those tapestries, he told me later, I decided in that moment, I do tapestries from now on. And I did the same with when I saw only one of his tapestries, which happened to be a large one, but still, it was so mysterious. And I could not believe that five or six weavers took 3 years to weave this one piece, totally compared to a painter who could have done this in 2 weeks. Painting. But weaving, I had to learn it. And it was so hard. It took me a year for half a square meter that I sold my loom later. And I worked exclusively for Aubusson workshops because they are, you can stone me now, but they are by far the best trained. You have to have 3 years of apprenticeship plus 4 years of journeymanship before you can weave by hand a total circle without, you know, getting it deformed. And if you don't do that, don't even sit down at a loom and pretend to be a weaver.
Obviously, very rigorous training at the Aubusson School. Well, again, if you can describe, I think in many people's minds when they hear tapestry, they do think Renaissance images. Mm-hmm. Describe a tapestry by Monsieur Lursa.
The Lursa tapestries, you please come to the Lulu. In the art museum, we have one piece there. Mm-hmm. It is actually the second last I worked on the cartoon in 1965, and it was finished before his death. But then he did one more, and that was one of the most exciting days because he did everything by himself, while usually I'm the one who put the numbers in for the colors, the cartoon à l'envers, in reverse, for the weavers.
And when you say cartoon, you don't mean la bande dessinée kind of cartoons, no?
No. It's the life-size design in Aubusson in reverse because they weave from the back, which is a very big technical advantage. You avoid slits by hooking the two adjacent colors in the back together. If you do it from the front, you see it. And if you do it from the back, like we do, you see nothing from the front. Only on the back, you can feel it. This is the most solid quality in the world. And I'm sorry to say that, but most American weavers, I would say 98%, they weave in a way that it won't last. You know, it's too subtle. It's too soft, the material. You've got to come into the show. You see several samples of that sort. And then you see my, and the Lursa tapestry, woven with the hardest possible wool, cross breadth, they call it, English cross breadth. Because the harder the material is, the more you can beat with a comb each row of design you weave in. And if you don't beat it hard, you don't have a good quality. And tapestry, Lursa said, tapestry, c'est fait pour durer. Tapestry is meant to last for centuries.
Well, that's why we think of them from the 12th century, 14th century. We remember tapestries. I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, my guest is Monsieur Dirk Holger.
Voilà.
He is a curator of the new exhibit at the Paul and Lulu Hilliard University Art Museum. It's called The New Art of the Loom, Contemporary International Tapestries. You'll be giving a talk, you mentioned this evening, but you're giving one tomorrow morning at 10, I believe.
At 10 a.m. and introduce those who are willing to learn a little bit to see 24 panels from 24 artist panels from 16 countries, including Japan, Korea, Taiwan. The Asians have this very special skillfulness, not only in their head, but in their fingers. You will see the difference. And, of course, a few Americans, a big one from South Africa, in case you know the name, it's by William Kentridge. He's the only one in the show who is in many, many museums with his tapestries. Come and see and admire.
Well, and give us a sense of what the subject matter is. What do people make tapestries of, or is there a subject matter? When we think of older tapestries as having a story, are these more abstract? Or
In this show, you do have about every artistic individual expression that's possible, including mine that looks really antiquish, a verdure, aubusson verdure, all green leaf, blue-green in wool, and then the white light. The lights on the leaves are made with white, unbleached, just washed silk. Because we found out, if you bleach silk, it turns gray after a few years. But if you only wash it and keep the original whiteness, it keeps its taste. So come and see the different styles, because there is a wonderful weaver, Lorna Ramlochan Singh from Trinidad Tobago, East Indian. You've got to see fantasy she's pouring into her design, and the fantasy in the design is actually her family's life story through over to 200 years, how the people from India, called the East Indians, come to Trinidad Tobago and
so there's some narrative history in some of these pieces.
Yeah, some of those, I think we should go and bend and borrow a little kneeling bench from a church and put them in front of two or three of those panels. They are so gorgeous. At least we have to have a couch and sit there.
I'm sure we can find some prédieus around here.
Voilà.
Now, when you say contemporary, how far back do the oldest of these pieces go?
Oh, actually, mine is the oldest from 1985, woven in Aubusson. My weavers are all gone to a better place because Aubusson is in a big crisis right now. Here is, you didn't ask me that, but why is tapestry not popular? Why is it not in these days? There's only one word. I hate that word. It's glass. Look at modern architecture. Hardly any building is built with real walls anymore. Glass kills tapestry. Wherever I go, glass walls, huge windows, daylight is as fatal to tapestry as humidity. So I even gave up two huge commissions because the people would not change their glass roof over it. I said, no, I will never hang my stuff. It will be faded in 20 years maybe. And my pieces should hang there for centuries.
So they were really good in dark castles.
Voila. Yeah, well, we don't build those anymore. But we still have some architects who actually live in the houses that you don't throw stones in, you know. So we want to have some architects who still build at least two or three walls off this, away from sunshine. Mm-hmm. Remember the World Trade Center in New York? Those huge glass walls. But they had those four walls where the elevators were, and there was a huge, well, huge in itself, 50 square yard Miro tapestry. It's burned, it came down. But that tapestry was a stamp, like a stamp on a letter, postal stamp, in comparison to the wall, which was 2,000 square meters, white marble. And I got to say that they invited me the Port Authority of New York to design a tapestry for the other side of the wall. 2,000, so I made one that is four times bigger than a Miro, 200 square yards, and they loved it. They loved the design. They said, okay, let's do it. They said, who's going to pay for it? I said, what is this? Yeah, the Spanish government paid for the mural. We assumed that the German government would pay for that. You know, it's a gorgeous cosmic design. So I went to Bonn and showed it. Here's the air, the question. They come back to me, who are you? They didn't know me. So they would never have paid for it. So it was never made. I'm glad to say now, because it would have all been burnt, gone. Well, but tapestry is, at least, you've got to know this, one square yard by one weaver in our time takes at least 1 month. If you take less, forget about it.
Pardon. Well, where are the centers of tapestry making in the world right now? You mentioned your school, the Aubusson School, but where do people make tapestries now? Are there centers, schools around the world?
No more. Oh. There's maybe beside Aubusson Tournai in Belgium. I had one of my pieces woven there. I always go for the very, very best quality. If it's mediocre, don't even touch it. But in I'm a member of the ATA, American Tapestry Alliance, over 600 weavers, and they are all individual weavers in little studios with just maybe one or two looms, weaving all by themselves, and they keep tapestry alive. But now they will hate me. This is not the future. You have to have a loom, let's say, for 10 or 20 weavers to sit in a row, in one row next to each other, trained so well that the one on the left can pass on the thread to the one to the right and weave an image, a tapestry. C'est mural, Lursaster, a tapestry that is related to architecture and should be minimum. I love to exaggerate, 10 square yards big and not just one square yard. You know, it's what I call the small things that they show all over. This is home sweet home, needlework. Mm-hmm. Or Lursaster put it that way, les jeunes femmes qui tricotent. Voilà.
There are those. Well, for example, the woman you mentioned who has the history of her family, where was that tapestry made, actually?
At her studio in Canada. Studio. She's Canadian now. Mm-hmm. You know, you can come and meet her. I just met her for the first time. I only adored her designs, and you got to touch it. Actually, in the museum, it always says, don't touch. But there's one piece hanging, and I gave them mine. The Verdure, you can come, turn it around, touch it, squeeze it, because it's a tactile art. That's the difference to an oil painting. You don't want to touch a Rembrandt painting, but you would love to touch let's take the other guy from that period, Rubens. You don't touch a painting by Rubens, but his tapestries you want to touch. It's the texture in the material that makes it so different.
I'm sure there are many people who didn't know Rubens had tapestries.
Oh, yeah, huge ones, you know, unfortunately. Pardon, because I'm sorry to say, but this is the decadent period, the 17th century. They made it so fine, it's called the overdoing of the craft, that even the king of France could no longer afford it. And by 1690 or so, all the manufacturers closed. And then came, for our sake, for our safes, William Morris, end of the 19th century.
I was going to ask you about him, yes.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
William Morris. Well, just that his tapestries, your opinion about his tapestries, the William Morris tapestries.
They are a good start, but they are not for the future. It's just that he survived, he revived the art, but his designs are just looking backward. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like Verdures of the 15th, 16th century. It's not modern. Mm-hmm. Only a few years later, around 1901 or 2, you never heard that name before, the Scherebeck, the German studio, finally brought modern design like any Albers and others artists into the weaving, onto the loom. And with that, a revival began. And then it was dead again for another 40 years until Lursaster came. I must tell you, without Lursaster, we wouldn't be here. The show would not be there. Even the Calders. And, I tell you now the big difference. Why don't you ask me this? What's the difference between a painting and a tapestry?
Voila.
Yeah, I tell you, it was it's an anecdote. I'm not making this up. It was a few years before I was at the castle. Picasso visited Lursaster and asked, why do you weave these little designs? They were huge in that material. La laine, the wool. And Lursaster said, can I say it in French first? Parce qu'en fil, pardon, parce qu'un fil de ma laine, c'est beaucoup plus précieux qu'un bout de votre papier. Because one fiber of my wool is 1,000 times more precious than a piece of your paper, cher grand maître. And Picasso put on his beret and never came back to the castle.
Well, I think you have really piqued people's interest about this subject. And I want to tell you, if you are tuning in right now, you get to hear more tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock mm-hmm. at the Hilliard University Art Museum. Dirk Holger will be giving a talk about tapestry. He is the curator for the new exhibit at the Hilliard. It's called The New Art of the Loom, Contemporary International Tapestries. One of his pieces will be there. So tomorrow, 10 o'clock, and it opens to the general public this weekend.
On Saturday.
On Saturday, exactly. But the talk is tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock at the Hilliard. Merci beaucoup,
de rien,
Monsieur
Holger. Madame. I hear, investi-t-il en air?
Oui.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Then let's start weaving. Weaving thoughts. First you weave thoughts, then you take the material and weave your thoughts into a fabric.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about it tomorrow. Merci beaucoup.
De rien.